Our fifth case for today is United States against Williams Ogletree. Mr. Wolf.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's still morning.
Afternoon almost. May it please the court, my name is Brian Wolf, and I represent the defendant appellant, Leslie Williams Ogletree. We raised two issues in our brief, but I'd like to focus today primarily on the first of those two issues, the sentencing court's relevant conduct finding with respect to tax year 2006, and particularly the court's reliance on these, the so-called log sheets. The log sheets, papers recovered from Rob Trell White's apartment during an unrelated criminal investigation, lack sufficient indicia of reliability to support their probable accuracy. The sentencing court clearly erred in relying in any way on the log sheets in finding that Williams Ogletree worked for Rob Trell's tax pro office in early 2007 and assisted in filing returns under PJH Financial. This resulted in Williams Ogletree being sentenced based upon an inflated sentencing range. This court should remand the case for resentencing.
Do we know that the log sheets were so important that this is the kind of error that does require resentencing? I mean, there definitely are problems with these log sheets.
Sure.
I mean, if they're talking about Leslie as a male and if they're, you know, not really linked up with what was going on, I can certainly see that. But is it really that central?
We believe it is. The sentencing court relied on only three things in making its determination and making its factual finding with respect to tax year 2006. This was one of those three items.
Well, you're worried about the, what was it, 68 after 07 that
68 returns, which, as is probably evident to you, caused the defendant's sentencing range to increase by 20%. Yeah, those losses,
yeah,
you know, caused the aggregate to go above $1 million.
I was a little confused exactly what the scheme was, but was this an effort to find people who wouldn't otherwise, I guess, file an income tax return? To file one, and was it seeking an income? I think it's earned income tax credit. Was that part of the scheme?
The first part's correct. So the scheme was to go out to folks who weren't expected to file returns for the applicable tax year, and to obtain their unique identifiers, their name and their social security number, and then to make filings. The second part of what you mentioned, it's called an RAL. At the time, it was a product offer by banks, which would effectively be a short-term loan from the bank from a liquidity purpose to allow you to get the refund.
Theoretically, there's a refund coming, or at least that's based on that. That's what the loan's based on, isn't it?
That's correct. The loan is made with the
expectation. They have to come up with phony income to show, but see, where I lose out is where's any evidence that they actually paid some kind of a tax, or what do they use to say there's a refund coming?
I mean, it's a great point. You know, as you probably know, when persons file tax returns, it's kind of on an honor system, and so my understanding is that there are W-2s generated to support
So there's a presumption there that they actually paid them.
That's exactly right.
Well, it's, you know, to run this up over $1 million is a concern.
That's exactly right.
She claims she didn't get much of a cut.
She certainly did not get much of a cut. I think the evidence on the record is that she received about $150,000, about $62,000 of tax preparer fees that the government made all sorts of statements that that they understand she also got a cut of the refunds. There's no evidence on the record supporting that fact.
And she was apparently had at least a legitimate portion of her business where she was actually getting.
That's exactly right. She had done this for many years. That's exactly right. If I can turn the court's attention back over to the log sheets.
I just wanted to come back to the log sheets also, because although there's this, you know, male identifier. There's no other Leslie in this record, and there are multiple references to Leslie and LKJ, right? So even though it's not great, you know, maybe these aren't so bad.
I definitely think you're being charitable. It's a lot less than great. There are all sorts of names on here, 9 and 20 and Joe Blow. These are folks, we have no idea who they are. They weren't referenced in any way during the trial. Just to be clear, these log sheets were presented for the first time during sentencing. I think, in fact, that the log, the company.
And they're
log
just introduced to corroborate the statement that Rob Trell makes that she continues to work there. So if you miss that, that's what really my first question was about. If you lose one piece of corroborating evidence, is there any reason to think that the sentence is undermined so badly that we need to redo it?
I believe that there is. The sentencing court spent some time talking about the log sheets. In the sentencing judge's mind, the log sheets were really important. Just to be clear, Rob Trell is the co-conspirator, and a lot of this also kind of centrally focuses on his statements. 5 years after the fact, he says that, that the defendant appellant worked for Tech's Pro Office for, quote, a period of time in 2007. That's it. And so, there's all sorts of vagueness and in all of the evidence that the government presented. So absolutely, anything that would support any of his comments was, in our view, totally critical to the sentencing court's determination. And it's not just the names or the references to mail on the log sheets. I mean, it's titled Texture 2007. Texture 2007 would refer to a period of time, calendar year 2008, when it's indisputable that Williams Ogletree had long since departed the conspiracy. For all we know, these log sheets were some sort of project plan in anticipation of how the returns might be filed, that just ultimately was never carried out or carried out in a different way. In our view, this is absolutely evidence that lacks sufficient indicia of reliability. It's not consistent from a facts and details perspective with the remainder of the record. It's just not something that the judge should have relied on in any way in making a finding of fact determination with respect to tax year 2006.
I thought the 07 reference was for the tax year of 06, and we're filing in 07 as opposed to for the tax year of 07.
Yes, so this would relate to the beginning of the calendar year of 2007 with respect to tax year 2006. I would also mention that this court has held that when evidence is inconsistent, the court must make a sufficiently searching inquiry into the government's evidence.
But at best, you come up with contradictory evidence. Rob Trell White does say that she's still involved in 2007, right?
He does. He says for a quote period of time in 2007,
right?
She was involved.
And there are these suspicious links. The 68 returns and the same, phony information, social security numbers, names, and stuff.
It's a fair question, but those 68 returns. So those relate to those are returns that were filed using they're called recycled returns using repeat information. An IRS agent testified that there were a couple of repeats from that same 2005 tax year unique identifiers. So in other words, an IRS agent said that in 2008, tax year 2008, well beyond when it's indisputable that Williams Ogletree had departed the conspiracy, this conspiracy is recycling returns. And so it's not the case that somehow is an indictment that must mean that she was involved because there were repeat information. I think the record, it's very clear that all sorts of folks had these unique identifiers with respect to tax year 2005, and the conspiracy continued to use them long beyond when there's no question that Williams Ogletree had long since departed. So all of this, all of the things that we're talking about here, it really strikes us as a stretch by the government. They were kind of hung up on $835,000 of intended losses for tax year 2005. The next threshold is $1 million of losses. This was the way to get it. And so the government showed up at sentencing, and lo and behold, introduces the tax log sheets, which, as we just discussed, are filled with all sorts of inconsistencies. Most of the fields are blank. I mean, it's not even a complete document. And this is what they relied on to increase the losses. If I could just make one last comment, and that is, as you all know, that in a tax fraud case like this, generally the single most important determinant of the length of a defendant's sentence under the guidelines are the intended losses. So it's particularly crucial that the district court rely on reliable evidence in calculating the defendant's loss. I mean, it's absolutely vital with respect to the outcome. If you don't have any additional questions, I'll...
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Greening.
May it please the court. Kelly Greening on behalf of the United States.
So this evidence about still involved with TaxPro in early 2007 is pretty weak. I mean, we need, even at sentencing, we need indicia of reliability, and we need some kind of solid ground to particularly to move somebody up into that next band of sentencing authorization. So I'm a little bit troubled by it, to be honest.
Yes, Your Honor. So it's the government's position, and the district court agreed, that the evidence showing that the defendant continued to file tax returns in 2007 is reliable. I'd like to start with a few specific points that were brought up on the TaxPro log sheets. So first, the log sheets are not unreliable based on the fact that someone wrote tax year 2007 at the top of one page of those log sheets.
It's really a cumulative problem. There's that mistake. There is Leslie/Mail. Nothing on these documents links them to her business. It's pretty weak.
Yes, Your Honor. So the tax pro log sheets were introduced at sentencing, as you mentioned, solely to corroborate Mr. White's statement that the defendant continued to work at TaxPro in January 2007. Specifically on the gender issue, because I think that can look seriously troubling, it's actually the government's position that the genders listed on that log sheet are more likely referring to the taxpayers themselves and not to the tax return preparers. I'd like to explain why. First, the taxpayers have other personal information listed on those log sheets, their full names and their social security numbers. In addition, in the version of the log sheet submitted to this court, the government redacted the taxpayers' names in order to protect their privacy, but in the version submitted to the district court, those names were unredacted, and one could compare those names along with the genders and see that, in fact, they did match. And again, as to the date, as I was going to mention, every return that's dated and filed on these TaxPro log sheets was dated in January 2007. That's consistent with tax year 2006 and corroborates Mr. White's statement that the defendant worked out of the TaxPro office in 2007. In addition, Mr. White's statements were reliable evidence of the defendant's continued participation in the scheme. The district court was entitled to credit a non-testifying co-conspirator's statements as reliable, so long as there was other reliable evidence to back that up or other reasons to find it reliable. Here, the district court did just that, found that the evidence of the 68 fraudulent returns themselves corroborated Mr. White's statements because those returns, as was mentioned already here today, use the same taxpayer identification information that the defendant had used the year prior, which is exactly what Mr. White described. In addition, the TaxPro log sheets, with all of their problems, certainly do corroborate Mr. White's statements that the defendant was in that office in January 2007. As the Chief Judge mentioned, Leslie is the name that's listed on the log sheets that we say refers to the defendant, and she was the only person associated with this scheme with that name.
Was it Williams Ogletree was a tax filer professional? That's what she did. That was her expertise. Was that expertise instrumental and needed in this scheme that maybe only she could provide, or at least she substantially was the person that set it up and her expertise?
Yes, thank you, Judge Mannion. That's actually something the district court talked about at length in the 3553A factors portion of the sentencing hearing. The defendant was the person with the tax preparation knowledge. In the record, it shows that Mr. White did not have a background in tax preparation and needed the defendant's expertise to learn about tax preparation, return filing, and that she was actually essential to the continuation of the scheme.
She has a number, right, that allows her to sign on behalf of other people.
Yes, Your Honor.
And didn't he eventually get one, though?
He eventually got three additional numbers, Your Honor. Yes, he did. He filed for three new non-incorporated entities in tax year 2006. Mm-hmm. One of those was PJH Financial, which, according to his statement, he gave to the defendant when she came to the tax pro office in early 2007 and asked her to file fraudulent returns under that PJH Financial electronic identification number. And the defendant did so using the same taxpayer information she had used the year before. According to Mr. White, this is actually what led to the defendant leaving the scheme. This is what led to the defendant leaving the conspiracy. Oh. Because when Mr. White found out that she had used the same taxpayer information, he was afraid, according to his statement, that it would flag those returns for the IRS, which, in fact, it actually did. That the claimed refunds for those 68 returns was approximately $253,000, but the IRS only paid out $343,000, obviously flagging these returns as problematic. If there are no further questions from the panel?
No, apparently not.
The government requests that this court affirm the conviction and sentence.
All right, thank you. Mr. Wolf, you had basically run out of time, but if you'd like a minute to rebut, I'll give you a minute.
I appreciate that very much. I'd just like to make three very quick comments. First, we just heard from the government that according to Rob Trell, the defendant departed the conspiracy because of the repeat returns and the fraud detection. We also heard the government's view on the references to mail. I mean, again, this is speculation. There's nothing on the record, including in Rob Trell's statements, that talk in any way about why Williams Ogletree departed the conspiracy. This continues to be the government's, their own view for what they believe happened, and that's largely what the sentencing court relied on in making its determination, not on the facts, but on the government's view of the facts. Second, the court relied on three pieces of evidence, as we talked about. We have no idea what the kind of the variable weight that the sentencing judge placed on each of those. And so, you know, it might be the case that Rob Trell's statements have, quote, some credibility. But at the end of the day, you know, the sentencing judge relied as one of three pieces of evidence on the log sheets, and that was in error. But finally, I would just like to note, and I'll make it quick, that once again, there was no testimony to link the log sheets back to the conspiracy. The government certainly could have brought in persons to testify to try to make that link. They could have brought in an IRS agent to try to connect back the actual return set forth in the log sheet. The government didn't do any of that. There was no support at sentencing to try to connect the log sheets.
Okay. I think you need to wrap up now.
Absolutely. Then. So we would respectfully ask this court to remand for resentencing.
All right. Thank you very much. And you took this case by appointment, as I understand.
Okay.
We appreciate very much your help, that of your firm. It's great help to the court.
Thank you.
And thanks as well, of course, to the government. We'll take the case under advisement.